Vivid, vibrant, living alive. We should spend the better part of our time, yours and mine, with a green like this. Maybe some of it would rub off.
Waiting room carpets and turntable mats, Columbia and bank lamps, great uncle's legs and corduroy trousers, the smell of pipes, naps in the afternoon and radio plays, a percentage of camouflage and Brenda, spinach and grass in a mud pie, old sofas dragging through smelly old blocks of flats, damp and clammy reptile houses in March, and old steam trains laden with golden syrup tins.
Time was when blue was the saddest. Sadder than that, blue was the bluest blue can be blue. When you see this blue, true blue, too true, true blue.
However, at the end of 1901, when Picasso returned to Barcelona, a deep and significant change took place in his painting. This change strikes us first of all in his choice of colors. The variable range of brilliant tones yields to a single, dark and oppressive blue. But this transformation in his painting, the first in a long series, was more than a mere change in color, more than the adoption of a new tonality. It was above all the result of a new attitude toward people. Instead of observing them ruthlessly and satirically, he now treated his models with sympathy, with melancholic tenderness. His subjects changed too. Instead of painting cafe scenes, Parisian interiors with women in big hats seated at tables and drinking, he began to represent, to imagine enigmatic, emaciated figures standing rigid and silent against a vague or empty background. These men and women no longer evoke contemporary life. They have nothing in common with the tense, nervous atmosphere of Paris at the beginning of this century. They are beggars, blind men, and poor street artists, transformed by the painter's compassionate and affectionate vision into almost mythical figures that belong to no particular or familiar epoch. The atmosphere in which Picasso places them is more or less that in which similar figures appear in Rilke's poems written in the same year, 1901. An atmosphere of solitude, hunger, and everyday misery, born with dogged courage. And this spiritual atmosphere is suggested not only by the angular lines of the emaciated bodies, but above all by the sad, distressing color, the subdued blue, which dominates the pictorial space and the figures by its remote and silent unreality.
Of all of the hues that we tend to abuse, blue is the color most widely confused. It's time you all knew the whole truth about blue. Here's a few useful clues to blues usual.
Researchers at Harvard Medical School demonstrated this by showing that your eyes are part of a light reception system that can keep you alert when sleep starts to fog your brain. When the researchers exposed people to blue light at night, this system immediately increased their alertness and performance on tests. These findings add to a growing body of evidence that a novel light reception system exists in the human eye in addition to sight, says Stephen Lockley, an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School and a researcher in sleep medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. Men and women exposed to blue light sustained a high level of alertness during the night when people feel most sleepy. These results suggest that light may be a powerful countermeasure for the negative effects of fatigue for people who work or study at night. It's well known that white light can do the same. Long-distance travelers and shift workers sit in front of commercial light boxes that shift their natural clocks with glaring white light,
piping their attention to daylight levels.
Apparently, blue light can do this more effectively. It is superior to even green light, to which human vision is most sensitive. Sleepy people bathed in blue light for 6.5 hours performed better than those lit by an equal amount of green light. They consistently rated themselves as less sleepy, showed quicker reaction times, and had fewer lapses of attention than those exposed to green light. To Lockley and his colleagues, this is proof that eyes are not just used to see. Our orbs also monitor light for the purpose of setting our biological clocks to a 24-hour day. If clock setting and shifting were done by vision alone, it would be more sensitive to green, not blue, light. Further proof comes from the responses of totally blind people. Most of these people toss and turn through a lifetime of sleeping problems because light cannot reach their brains to adjust their biological clock each day. But a small number easily adjusts to the 24-hour cycle of light and darkness, even though they cannot see it, because their light detection system remains intact. Lockley and his colleagues described details of the light tests they performed on 16 healthy men and women in the February 1st issue of a scientific journal appropriately called Sleep. The results open up a whole new range of possibilities for using light to improve human health, Lockley comments. One application could be to improve alertness in people who need sustained attention for a long time, such as long-distance drivers, pilots, or even astronauts. Blue-lit shift workers might increase safety in dangerous situations and emergencies that arise on night shifts. Finally, properly timed blue light may ease the sleep hangovers of those jetting across time zones for business or pleasure. People who already use white light boxes to reset their biological clock should be able to do so more efficiently with blue light, Lockley suggests. You can shift your sleep-wake cycle with less light energy or less time in front of a light box. Asked if blue light boxes are commercially available yet, Lockley noted that many companies sell them. In theory, you could get the same effect in a room lit with ordinary blue bulbs, but this has not been studied. During the past few years, a specialized set of light-sensitive cells, which have nothing to do with vision, were discovered in the retina at the back of the eyes. These cells boast extensions that reach deep into the brain and connect with a small area of the hypothalamus that contains the workings of our internal clocks. What remains unknown is whether light affects this area directly or through a sleep hormone known as melatonin. During night hours, melatonin peaks, increasing sleepiness. As daylight comes, or during artificial exposure to light at night, this hormone veil lifts and enhances alertness. Light may also signal other parts of the hypothalamus, changing alertness without changing melatonin levels. Either way, the internal clock's works are most sensitive to blue light.
Sky blue, iced cocktails and airplanes and t-shirts, clean washing and toothpaste on eyes, Finland and Scandinavia at war over an ice block, swimming pools and old police cars, snapping beaks and eggshells in nests, Penelope's Tupperware, walking after a good night's sleep on a clean sheet.
She wore blue velvet, bluer than velvet was the night.
I still can see blue velvet through my tooth.
A few years ago, the makers of M&M's added a new color to the candy bag.
Blue. Why blue?
Although they reported that this was the result of a vote by M&M's fans, it raises a few questions. It may very well be the last color left in the bag after the novelty wears off. Of all the colors in the spectrum, blue is an appetite suppressant. Weight loss plans suggest putting your food on a blue plate. Or even better than that, put a blue light in your refrigerator and watch your munchies disappear. Or here's another tip, dye your food blue. A little black will make it a double whammy. Why? Blue food is a rare occurrence in nature. There are no leafy blue vegetables, no blue meats, and aside from blueberries and a few blue purple potatoes from remote spots on the globe, blue just doesn't exist in any significant quantity as a natural food color. Consequently, we don't have an automatic appetite response to blue. Furthermore, our primal nature avoids foods that are poisonous. 1,000,000 years ago, when our earliest ancestors were foraging for food, blue, purple, and black were color warning signs of potentially lethal food. A food professional knows, color and the appeal of various foods is closely related. Just the sight of food fires neurons in the hypothalamus. Subjects presented food to eat in the dark reported a critically missing element for enjoying any cuisine, the appearance of food. For the sighted, the eyes are the first place that must be convinced before a food is even tried. This means that some food products fail in the marketplace, not because of a bad taste, texture, or smell, but because the consumer never got that far. Colors are significant, and almost universally it is difficult to get a consumer to try a blue-colored food, though more are being marketed for children these days. Greens, browns, reds, and several other colors are more generally acceptable, though they can vary by culture. The Japanese are renowned for their elaborate use of food colors, some that would have difficulty getting approval by the Food and Drug Administration in the United States.
Purple. All dignity. All pomp. All put on. Has an aura to be felt as well as seen. Purple has class. And that's why purple is king.
In these days of flying saucers and Sputniks, you expect almost anything to happen. The thing, the fly.
The earliest pill emerged in ancient Egypt as a little round ball containing medicinal ingredients mixed with clay or bread. For the next 5,000 years, up until the middle of the 20th century, pills were round and white. Color was almost non-existent. Over-the-counter medications were only available as tablets in ghostly white or pasty pastel hues. Likewise, prescription medications were colorless pills encased in clear or transparent orange vials. Liquids, with the exception of Pepto-Bismol's pink, were drab as well. It's a different world today, thanks to advances in technology. The color transformation started in the 60s and accelerated in 1975, when the new technology of soft gel capsules made colorful medications possible for the first time. Shiny primary colors such as cherry red, lime green, and tangy yellow arrived first. Today's gel caps can be tinted to any of 80,000 color combinations. As for tablets, continuous advancements in technology consistently bring new and colorful coated products to market. But does color really matter? Aside from the obvious fact that pills are more attractive to the eye, color has indeed benefited consumers as well as the pharmaceutical companies in several very functional ways. First of all, color helps the consumer distinguish the non-prescription or prescription medications from other tablets or capsules. As a testimony to the serious nature of this issue, the New York Times called patients' failure to take medications as prescribed the world's other drug problem. This is especially relevant for the elderly who get confused when they take various medications, most of which are small white tablets. Consider the statistics. The U.S. Senate's Aging and Youth Committee reported that the typical Medicare beneficiary uses an average of 18 to 24 prescriptions a year. Researchers have also found that patients who took more drugs on a daily basis preferred bright pill colors. Consequently, color and color combinations are a powerful way to create emotional appeal and reduce medical errors. Consider another fact. Patients respond best when color corresponds with the intended results of the medication.
For example, call blue for a good night's sleep and dynamic red for speedy relief. Or consider a reverse scenario. Fire red capsules for acid reflux or murky bile green for nausea. A similar benefit is noted in the synesthetic effects of color, and specifically a color's association with smell and taste. Even early civilizations such as the Romans recognized that people eat with their eyes as well as their palates. As proof, butter has been colored yellow as far back as the 1300s. Although technically we don't eat pills, we do taste and swallow them. What would a gray pill taste and smell like? Smoky, fruity, moldy? How about a pink pill? Sour, bitter, or sweet? Which one would be easier to swallow? Furthermore, synesthetic effects of colors also include associations with temperature. For example, a blue pill is cool, an orange pill hot. Aside from countless functional benefits for the consumer, color is now playing an even more powerful role in transforming the plain white pill into a unique brand image. This has become even more significant due to two recent events that have transformed marketing and the role of color in the pharmaceutical industry. First, many medications previously available only with prescription are now available as over-the-counter products. This means that customers are shopping for medications and making decisions in stores. In fact, recent research by the Henley Center reports that 73% of purchasing decisions are now made in-store. Therefore, it's even more important for pharmaceutical products to catch shoppers' eyes and to convey information effectively. As competition heats up, color and design are critical to the brand. Second, 5 years ago, the Food and Drug Administration in the U.S. relaxed its restrictions on direct consumer marketing of pharmaceuticals. As a result, broadcast and print advertising exploded. Just turn on your television and note which drugs are being marketed aggressively.
Ask your doctor about the purple pill.
And it's not limited to television. Print advertisements are predominantly purple, and the product's website is hosted at www.purplepill.com. Consequently, drug companies are leaving nothing to chance. The color and shape of the pills and the names and imagery used to sell products are heavily researched and tested, much like the drugs themselves. Color has been elevated to a powerhouse status because it is the most fundamental part of a drug's personality. As is the case with all products, from computers to clothes, purchasing decisions are not just based on what a product looks like, but on the idea of the brand and how customers feel about it. In other words, color has the unique ability to do all three simultaneously: to create emotional appeal, to communicate functional values and benefits, and to distinguish the brand from others. A significant example of the critical role colors play is the competition between two prescription medications, Viagra and Levitra. Viagra, a diamond-shaped blue pill, was introduced in 1997. It immediately became an overnight sensation, one of the most successful prescription medications in pharmaceutical history, with sales of the drug totaling $1.74 billion in 1 year alone. In 2002, the marketing groups of a rival product, Levitra, brainstormed the issue of color for their brand. The purpose was to figure out how to beat the blues, referring to Viagra's sky blue tablets. Extensive market research concluded that customers didn't resonate with the imagery of Viagra. They found that the blue color was too cool. It was equated with being sick. The goal was to come up with an enticing color and logo for Levitra. After extensive testing, the team presented Levitra's color: orange, an extremely vibrant and energetic color. The logo: an orange and purple flame. In conclusion, color does indeed matter. 80% of visual information is related to color, and this is especially true for pharmaceutical products. Color is functional. Color subliminally and overtly communicates information and provides many other operational benefits. On the other hand, color may not matter in the future of prescription medications. Scientists have created a coin-sized microchip drug dispenser that may be implanted under the skin. It would be programmed to release medications in concentrated formulas, all on different schedules. Sensors may even be attached to the chip to detect the level of drug in your body, and then add more as needed.
Red. Color of roses, blood and riding hoods, passionate bulls and Spanish frogs, foxes and the top bit of traffic lights, dangerous hot jam, smell of fires, sirens and warnings, red shoes, strawberries and 60s guitars, anger, confidence and madness, burnt skin and running too fast down the chimney, ketchup spilling over red bootlaces, and the work outfit of Santa Claus. Tomato lipstick, CCCP, USSR, RSVP, SWALK.
Is another use of red. I just recently saw this movie by George Clooney called Good Night and Good Luck about the career of Edward R. Murrow in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. And this was at the height of what we call the Red Scare.
The McCarthy era.
The McCarthy.
Embarrassed too much or you get accused of too many things, you may see red and you may be red hot, which means to be very angry, to be mad at something. Now, red hot doesn't always have a negative denotation or connotation. To be red hot can also mean that you're just hot, you're on fire, you're desired, you're wanted, you're doomed.
My gal is red hot.
Your gal ain't do this squat.
I tell, my gal is red hot.
Your gal ain't do this squat.
She do this
love her, but the money she really got a lot. My gal is red hot.
Your gal ain't do this much.
She ain't got a lot of money, but the love she really got a lot.
She ain't got a lot of money, but the love she really got a lot.
There's something in crimson. No telling what crimson might do if the notion should start in its head. Watch out! Watch out! For crimson!
Declared Diana Vreeland, former editor of Vogue and source of many aphorisms. By this she meant that, just as navy blue in our culture tends to signify conservative respectability, pink exemplifies tradition and balance in Inja. The existence of universal stylistic and psychological color reactions is therefore placed in doubt. What we would consider a wild, flamboyant, and feminine color is, in India,
at least according to Diana Vreeland,
considered refined and conventional. I asked my daughter, who is 13 and loves the color pink, why the attraction and what it's all about. She said it's a
nice color.
It
looks good on me.
And
guys can't wear pink. It makes them look stupid.
More on this later.
Pink and black look good on everybody, except redheads.
When pressed, she suggested,
maybe it's because of Barbie.
Proof, 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 proof that kids are aware of the effects of marketing, branding, and advertising.
Maybe it's because I was given pink stuff as a baby. And maybe because it's pretty.
According to a Japanese color analysis website, the color pink is very suitable for ladies. In this, my research, I would like to say that they want to have dreams, hope toward their future, and to be tender in mind. These expert sources were consulted because I originally thought to investigate the assumed female propensity for pink. I wondered, was there indeed such a link? And if so, why? And how? In addition to consulting fashion mavens, online analysts, and teenagers, I plan to ask sociobiologists why this association, if it indeed existed, might be beneficial to the species.
As I soon found out, however, pink was actually considered a color best suited to boys until as late as the 1950s.
Blue was the girly color. Blue, pink, inasmuch as it is a watered-down red, the fiercest of colors, was naturally associated with boys, with their instinctive attraction to fire trucks and sports cars. The Ladies' Home Journal in 1918 said,
"The generally accepted rule is pink for the boy and blue for the girl. The reason is that pink, being a more decided and stronger color, is more suitable for the boy, while blue, which is more delicate and dainty, is prettier for the girl."
So much for genetic, gender-based color predilections, or at least in the way we commonly think of them. My research would now take me in a new direction.
Why did the gender color switch take place?
It's hard to say for sure, but one could make the case that as women asserted themselves in society in the late 1940s, as a response to the influx of men who were mostly traumatized and battered from World War II, more active roles in the world encouraged women to adopt an appropriately energizing color for themselves. That is, if one is to believe the Ladies' Home Journal color analysis. It could thus be argued that adopting pink was an early sign of the feminism due to flower in the 1960s, and that far from being a color imposed on women by marketing men, pink was actually a badge of self-determination and power. Alternatively, one might conjecture that the pink triangles used during the war by the Nazis to identify homosexuals gave the color a queer association, at least to North Americans, thus leading men to abandon it. Some hard data on the pink effect is available. In the late 60s, Alexander Shouse, director of life sciences at the American Institute for Biosocial Research in Tacoma, did extensive studies on psychological and physiological responses to the color. Shouse had read the earlier studies of Swiss psychiatrist Max Luscher, who found that color preferences provide useful data about one's personality profile. He noticed that color preferences shifted according to psychological and physiological fluctuations in his patients. Color choice reflects emotional states, according to Luscher, and also reflects corresponding changes in the endocrine system. Shouse then asked himself if the reverse might also be true. She thought, observer, could color cause emotional and hormonal changes? Could varying wavelengths of light received by the eye trigger profound and measurable responses in the endocrine system? In early tests in 1978, Shouse observed that color, surprisingly, affected muscle strength, and it even influenced the cardiovascular system. Shouse began to experiment on himself with the help of fellow researcher John Ott, and soon discovered that a particular shade of pink had a most profound effect. He labeled it P618. It was noted that by merely staring at an 18x24-inch card printed with this color, especially after active and intentional exercise, there would result a marked effect on lowering the heart rate, pulse, and respiration as compared to other colors. In 1979, Shouse managed to convince the directors of a naval correctional institute in Washington State to paint some prison confinement cells pink in order to determine the effects this might have on prisoners. Needless to say, suggesting that prison cells be painted pink was not an immediately popular idea. Prison officials, like the rest of the culture, having rapidly absorbed the switch in pink's gender affiliation. So, to commemorate the bravery of the prison directors, Shouse named the color after the two men. Baker Miller Pink is now the official name of the paint that can be mixed as follows: red 255, green 145, blue 175. At the correctional facility, the rates of assault before and after pink exposure were carefully monitored. According to the Navy's report, since the initiation of this procedure on March 1, 1979, there have been no incidents of erratic or hostile behavior during the initial phase of confinement. Merely 15 minutes of exposure was enough to ensure that the potential for violent or aggressive behavior had been reduced. That's not long. Pink is strong medicine. The confinement cells are pink to this day, and thus far, no hostile or violent behavior has occurred. In spite of such success, military use of Baker Miller Pink has been limited, though its enervating effect on potential and real enemies has indeed been investigated. A number of tanks used in Desert Storm were pink, but attempts by anti-war activists to surreptitiously surround the Bush administration with P618 have thus far been unsuccessful. Subsequently, Baker Miller Pink was studied by a team at Johns Hopkins University, where a peculiar tendency toward appetite suppression was observed. Researchers confirmed the now familiar stress reduction effects, but the corresponding appetite reduction was an unexpected side effect, fortuitous, as this team also happened to be searching for alternative means of weight loss. The Santa Clara County Jail soon got word of P618, sometimes also called drunk tank pink, and in late 1979, in a rush to achieve results, they may have overreacted. Officials painted a holding cell pink and immediately placed several inmates there for a few hours. This resulted in the prisoners scratching the paint off the walls with their fingernails. Subsequent procedures were limited to the recommended 15 minutes. The color was also used at a California VA psychiatric hospital and a San Bernardino youth clinic. One implacable patient, whose behavior seemed to show no signs of improvement under normal conditions, was as a last resort placed in a pink seclusion room where, within 6 minutes, he calmed, was heard crying, and was seen sitting in the middle of the room. News of the color that saps your energy continued to spread rapidly. In the early 1980s, visiting team football locker rooms at Iowa and Colorado State were painted pink until, in an effort to control this sneaky, unsolicited color therapy, a rule was passed by the Western Athletic Conference that both visiting and home teams' locker rooms had to be painted the same color. Color became a controlled substance. On the TV show,
That's Incredible,
when contestants were asked to support weight on their outstretched arms, those exposed to pink cards were less able to do so. And the logo of Weight Watchers, though not officially Baker Miller pink, is pink nonetheless, as if the appetite-suppressant properties of pink could insinuate themselves by just looking at a product's packaging. So, back to the beginning, girls and boys. Far from enhancing virility and voraciousness, pink leeches it away. Was pink then marketed post-World War II by men to women as a girly color in a secret effort to restrict gains made by women in the workforce during the war? To turn the newly independent earners back into passive consumers? This was all decades before the Baker-Miller research, of course, but one might go so far as to assume that the pink effect was unconsciously or instinctively known, except by the writers of Ladies Home Journal. Diana Vreeland's awareness that pink's power is culturally determined in this light looks prescient, and my daughter may buy into pink, but clearly she knows that it is being sold to her. Instinct and intuition often predate proof.
Take all the colors under the sun. Only one color I think much fun, and that's orange. Orange, I said, the silly old color who lives next to red. Orange into vitamin C's.
Orange. High solids and pogo sticks, sports bags and trout size, space hoppers and plastic footballs and damp cagoules. Squeaking cellophane and cheap shampoo. Dinghies and sunsets and sensation and contentment on a cushion with the Wolverhampton Wanderers. Sizzling slicing. Hearing wax crayons on classic fuzz. Yokel sideburns dripping with marmalade. Bad jokes at tasteless towns expense.
The color orange occurs between red and yellow in the visible spectrum at a wavelength of about 585 to 620 nanometers. Before the orange fruit was introduced to the English-speaking world, the color was referred to in Old English as yoink, which transliterates into modern English as yellow-red. In English heraldry, orange denotes strength, honor, generosity, and prosperity. Its use as a heraldic tincture is relatively rare. Orange is the national color of the Netherlands because its royal family originated from the French Principality of Orange. It is the color of choice for many of the national sports teams and their supporters. The nickname of the Dutch national soccer team is the Dutch word for orange. In the modern flag of the Netherlands, red substitutes the original orange. But on royal birthdays, the flag has an additional orange banner. Most geographical usages of the word orange can be traced back to Dutch maritime power in the 17th century. In Ireland, the use of orange dates from the reign of William of Orange, the Protestant English king and a Dutch stadtholder. Orange signifies Protestantism in Northern Ireland and Hinduism in India and Sri Lanka. Orange has become the color of opposition around the world. Orange was the rallying color of the 2004-5 Orange Revolution in Ukraine. Orange may also be symbolic of the political concept of democratic socialism. Orange is the contrasting color of blue and is highly visible against a clear sky. Therefore, orange is often used in safety. Safety orange is the same color as blaze orange, which is a shade of orange, color number 12199, required by United States law to be on the tips of barrels of such replica guns as airsoft guns or simply cap or toy guns. Safety orange is the color usually used in the United States for traffic cones, barrels, and other construction zone marking devices. OSHA requires that certain construction equipment must be painted safety orange. In some applications, especially with hunting apparel, fluorescent orange is used for the same purpose. International orange is darker and has a more reddish hue, so suppliers don't always adhere to standards. The Golden Gate Bridge is painted international orange. The Advanced Crew Escape System pressure suits worn by NASA astronauts on the space shuttle also use this color, as opposed to the lighter shade of safety orange used by the U.S. Air Force's high-altitude suits. In the aerospace industry, international orange is commonly used to indicate test parts, wiring, and equipment. Orange is also the favorite color of Manhattan-based sound sculptor Ed Shen.
Long before that, when light was deciding who should be in and who should be out of spectrum, yellow was in trouble. Yellow got lemons, and green got
in
limes.
The town where I was born lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told us of his life in the land of submarines. So we sailed onto the sun till we found the sea of green.
In a yellow submarine, yellow submarine, yellow submarine.
Warm and luminous like sunlight, the right shade of yellow brings cheer to dreary rooms. Some bright yellows, however, cause people pain in interior design. Imagine you're driving by a green field of grass punctuated by yellow wildflowers. Your eye gets distracted by the yellow flowers and your brain forgets the peaceful green grass. In an office, you can easily find yellow legal pads. The reason? Our eyes see yellow first, before other colors. As the most visible color, yellow grabs attention. Like the sun, too much bright yellow hurts our eyes and agitates us. Brilliant yellows make our eyes tired. Therefore, like road workers use yellow flags for caution, you want to use yellow with caution. Paint walls a pale yellow to mimic a sun-filled space and create a soothing feeling for the room's occupants. Choose soft, creamy yellows, not dingy, dirty-looking yellows that make people nauseous. In contrast, bright yellow-painted walls can cause feelings of turmoil and hostility. Use bright yellow sparingly, especially in high-anxiety spaces like kitchens. Naturally bright rooms that have been painted bright yellow overstimulate some people and may bring about angry feelings. Babies cry more and adults lose their tempers more often when surrounded by bright yellow walls. However, that very same dazzling yellow room may just be the perfect place on an overcast day in a cold climate. Small doses of bright yellows, added with accessories, add punch, catch the eye, and make rooms feel lively.
Lively?
Like the color red, yellow speeds up our metabolism. This color psychology aspect makes yellow a good color for china or tabletop accessories. There's nothing like a cup of coffee in a yellow mug to wake you up. Think of natural sunlight when you use yellow. Soft, warm rays feel good.
Bright, hot rays feel painful.
As with all interior design, balance using the color yellow ensures harmony. The color psychology beneath the color yellow helps you create a joyful home.
Mustard yellow, marinas and Volvos, waistcoats and snagged nylon polo necks, Arthur's sheepskin and illness and shaking, headaches and nausea, deadly gas and the sound of cardboard tearing.
Lemon pies and butterflies, yellow submarines, corn on the cob and tangerine. I like yellow things, or lemon pies and...
I'm just mad about saffron, now saffron's mad about me. I'm just mad. They call me mellow yellow.
This has been the Ed Shep Radio Experiment. Thank you for listening and tune in next week. This is Ed Shep signing off.
You're listening to WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope, and WFMU.org.